Leroy Cooper was making a lot of throat-clearing and sniffling noises. He was having trouble unlocking the heavy green door marked with a gold tin D. The strong box door finally opened, and I was looking across a long room, all the way up Central Park to 110th Street. It was a spectacular view of bright woods, narrow roads, even a few dark ponds. The apartment itself was weighted down with heavy wood furniture and hanging plants. It was conspicuously neat and clean. "Maid comes 2-3 times a week. Ursula Lipscomb," Cooper said. "Anybody else comes?" He cautioned me with a stiff, outstretched finger. "You're a burglar." "Thanks," I mumbled. "I thought I might be able to count on you." "I hope you find what you're looking for," he said anyway. His knobby black hands were visibly shaking, but he was trying to look arrogant. He was totally confused, I decided. He slowly, noiselessly closed the door, and I was alone in Thomas Berryman's apartment. Feeling more than a little unreal, I set right to work. I started with a quick tour of the place. Besides the airy living room, there were two large bedrooms. There was an eat-in kitchen and another large room being used as a study. I walked along, flinging open closets, pulling out drawers, making quite an arbitrary mess of things. I found a Walther automatic in the master bedroom, but there were no other guns anywhere. There were photographs of an exquisite dark-haired girl over a fireplace in the bedroom. She was an Irisher. There were also black-and-white photographs and paintings of last picture show western towns all over the walls. But there were no pictures of Thomas Berryman. Only clues about him. Blouses and Cardin and Yves Saint Laurent suits next to hunting wear from Abercrombie's. Boots from Neiman Marcus. Givenchy colognes. A rugged-looking jacket made of the good soft leather used for horse equipage. The second bedroom seemed to be some kind of guest room with bath. It was all set up like a room at the Plaza Hotel. Fresh, untouched Turkish towels and linen. Neutrogena soap still in its black wrapper. An unused tube of close-up that I opened for candy purposes. The study was full of books and cigars, and also one of the few things I'd specifically been looking for. It was a fat red book published by Random House. The maid or someone had put it upside down on one of the bookshelves. The book was called Jiminy, and it was Jimmy Horn's autobiography. Close beside Jiminy were four other books containing articles on Horn. Sambo, The Young Bloods, Black Consciousness, and Re-Nig. My next interesting discovery was three photographs. They were wrapped up in tissue paper and squirreled away in a bottom desk drawer. One of them showed a well-dressed blonde man who seemed to be signaling for a cab on a crowded, glittery street. The blonde man was in crisp, sharp focus. The second picture was of the same blonde man turned toward a street hustler this time. The second man wore blue jean biballs with no shirt and a blue jean cap with a peak. The blonde man's eyes were half closed and his mouth was open in a capital O. It looked like a candid comedy picture. The final shot was the blonde man again, but standing beside Ben Toy. This Ben Toy weighed 20 to 30 pounds more than when I'd seen him at the hospital. He was physically impressive to look at. Behind the two men was a white municipal building, a library, or a courthouse. The blonde man seemed to be pointing right at the camera. I was certain that he was Harley John Wynn. Soon after I looked at the pictures, I heard a loud creaking noise inside the apartment. I looked across the room and saw that the front door was slowly opening. I was helpless to do anything but watch it. First a hat, then Leroy Cooper's face appeared in a foot-wide crack. "How long are you going to be?" he complained. "Damn, man, you're taking too long for this." I said nothing to Cooper. I felt as though my skull had been shattered by someone swinging a heavy metal bar. Somehow the experience had translated into nausea, too. Getting no answer from me, Cooper slowly shook his head. He shut the door again. I heard him swearing outside. Very slowly, I was getting an emotional grasp of the situation I was involved in. I was starting to understand genuine fear of being hurt, the ability to take lives, fast, unexpected death. Eventually, I regrouped and left the building. I sent the 3 photographs to Lewis Rosten in Nashville. Then I spent the rest of the day visiting psychiatrists and psychologists who'd worked with Ben Toy. I also ate a pork chop sandwich in a lunch shop run by some Greek men. The chop was silver dollar size with the bone still in it. Because of the bone, the Greek men couldn't cut the sandwich. I ate around it, not completely understanding how or why people live in New York City. That night, after dinner with Alan Shulman, I called home. My wife Nan said she was missing me, and I was missing her too. Nan knows how to put me on an even keel, and I'd been flying just a little too high in New York. We talked about the Berryman story, and talking with her, I began to feel that I'd accomplished some things. After we finished, Nan put on my daughters for 2 minutes each. Janie Bug said almost nothing. Then she started to cry because her time was up. Little Cat said she'd pray for me at Trinity Episcopal if I promised to bring her back one of those miniature Empire State Buildings. That kind of thing, attitude, upsets me, but I don't know what to do about it. I tried to go to sleep, but I couldn't quite get there.